This is Radio Radio. I'm Martin Spinelli. On this installment of Radio Radio, Mixing It with Paul D. Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, that subliminal kid. Paul D. Miller has written on music and art for Slate.com, The Source, Rap Pages, The Village Voice, and many other publications. He's currently working on a book about intellectual property and its impact on youth culture called Flow My Blood, the DJ said. But most importantly for us today is his work as a platinum recording artist whose mixes are a furious combination of sounds and styles, old and new. Right now we're listening to Modal Mind. Paul D. Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, that subliminal kid. Paul, first thing, who is that kid and what exactly is subliminal about him?
A lot of my work deals with the sort of notions of construction, whether it's constructed identity or hybrid music tracks or even the notion of how art is made in the early 21st century. So I draw my references from music, from art, from literature. That subliminal kid is a character from a literary work by William S. Burroughs named The Nova Express. It's a character in the novel who's sort of reacting against the control of information. Burroughs, you gotta remember, was really into how information was dispersed throughout the culture and the lines of information in the culture and how that sort of configured people's ideas around identity. And so that subliminal kid was this person that played games with the control routes. The funny thing is, it's like the people controlling the routes of information in the culture were what he called the Nova Mob. So the subliminal kid was a character that got in and cut the lines of the routes of communication, like how DJ would cut records and resplice them so that they could get different messages out to the culture.
Do you borrow aesthetically from Burroughs as well? He was into tape cut experiments in the 70s, long before the technology was available for him to kind of realize his aesthetic visions.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely view Burroughs as a sound file source, so to speak. You know, I like his conceptualizations of how the cut-up would alter language, how the psychology of the cut-up would affect the creative act. But I also draw from other sources, like the French poet Mallarmé or Arthur Rimbaud, or even other African poets who dealt with nonlinear narrative, like Aimé Césaire. And all of these are people who are dealing with the impact of mass culture and information on how, again, the creative act would occur. So I like the idea of sampling from many, 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 many zones and being very dynamic about that.
Part of your art is really about making connections with other artists and other musicians. Can you tell me a little bit about the Tools series of collaborations that you started?
Yeah, the DJ Tools stuff was meant to be just a kind of a, a series of conversations like this one now, where I would figure out some angles on my own take on things, then I would talk with some fellow musicians to figure out their angles, and we'd make a recording, A-side, B-side, Then people would get the vinyl, make their own mix, you know, something like that. The idea for me is to find other musicians whose work I feel reflects a kind of engagement with multiculturalism and some degree of figuring out how to build bridges between different cultures. So it's not like I'm just taking a sample of an old record. The idea is just to get in touch with the people live and figure it out. And that's what makes things fun.
What I think of the talking picture.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I never heard of it.
I firmly believe that the machinery will favorably affect the lives of the workers. It is impossible, however, to forecast what electricity and invention will make of the world in 100 years hence. Who don't know a millionth of 1% about anything, all things, sooner or later, are a battery for others.
Edison, a Paul D. Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky collaboration with Scanner.
Also be very clear as to what we don't know, and we don't know exactly how that one was resolved.
And, and that as we go through this, over the next few days, over the next few weeks, people may also be feeling various degrees of shock. The important thing is to take care of yourself, the people around you.
Paul, you're a DJ who works a lot with what I would call unexpected collaborators, art music composers, classical musicians, people like that. How do you forge a connection between classical music and DJ music? How do you make it work?
Well, I always like to consider DJ music as the new folk music. I mean, it's essentially something where everyone has access to certain ideas and can just kind of flip it around like that. That's how folk music used to be back in the day, you know.
These days, it's all turntables,
computers,
MP3 files,
AIFF files, and so on and so on. So the idea is that I'm thinking of sampling as dematerialized sculpture. So
well, when you press play and some frequencies come out of your speaker, you know.
So I'm playing with a lot
of
these
sculpture as
a way of looking at collage.
And the idea is, of course, to draw people into a multi-interaction environment.
The funny thing is, of course, it's a reflection of how the world actually is.
The perception of art is one thing, mass culture is another thing, music is one thing, writing is another thing.
Issues that once things become digital, everything is mixable.
And I like the idea of using the metaphor of mixed culture to,
that's the real
break it all
down
and just say, you know,
it's a swirling maelstrom, like pick your fragments,
the mix, the melting pot, all that kind of stuff. DJ culture perhaps is the subconscious of that. That's how I view it, you know?
Thank you.
That was a Paul D. Miller remix of City Life by Steve Reich. Paul, in your writing, and even just now in this conversation, you mentioned something called DJ culture. What exactly is DJ culture?
I was really frustrated with the kind of rules and regulations around the writing culture. I used to write for the Village Voice, Rolling Stone, Spin, The Source, all these kinds of different magazines. But for me, it's like DJ culture is the one place where you can mix anything. You don't have to really follow the rules, although of course most people do. I use the mix as a metaphor for the acceptance of pluralism and a sort of engagement with how things could be. It's a hypothetical. You know, that's why I always describe it as sort of audio science fiction. So anyway, to make a long story short, it's like America's the culture of mass culture. You look at its art forms like Warhol or even like early stuff like Edison. Everybody had to figure out not just how to make one thing, but a lot of that one thing. We embody and somehow absorb the whole framework of the mass object at a much higher rate than pretty much any other culture on the planet, I think. And with the net, we're now seeing the end results of that, where it's just this hyper dispersion, you know.
So we really have to outgrow an older critical model, which was turning its nose up at mass culture because it was so reproducible, because it was so present, because it was so available. You're trying to find aesthetic opportunity in precisely what an older generation of art critics was dismissing.
Exactly.
Let's talk about mixing in general, mixing sounds, mixing theories, mixing languages. I think the mix is a very apt metaphor to describe our urban world of polyvalent inputs. So much stuff coming at us from so many different directions, so many different cultures, so many different advertisers. And I'm wondering what you think this culture of the mix might do for the way we think about ourselves as individuals. A decade and a half ago, we had a choice. We could be punks, we could be hippies, we could be popular, and we used different kinds of music and different kinds of visual cues to shape that identity for ourselves. But today, it feels like with so much information coming at us so fast, that older choice around identity seems to have eroded or become impossible.
I think at this point, it's all about how you frame and perceive that frame, you know, like, so at the end of the day, it's like you're just kind of like a gold miner in a river trying to go for the gold nuggets, you know, sifting through these kind of sand particles and shifting a little, you know, sifting device that somehow will let you get the good stuff and get out the bad. So it goes much more from like the notion of the cultural producer to the cultural kind of, how should I put it? What's a good term for gatherer of dust? I don't know. But that's what it's about at this point, all of the small, you know, information maelstrom issues, you know. So that's why I like to call the term data cloud, you know, where you got to the point where you're just existing as an osmotic sponge. But it's not just, because it's actually pretty fun to put the, you know, like color by dot, so to speak, you know, where you just kind of draw it all together. I'm fascinated with America at this point. We're probably the first culture that's been utterly consumed by our communications media. But, you know, the whole, like, what's that little cliche, the emperor has no clothes? Well, there is no real emperor. It's just kind of all these different particles of, like, phantasms of, like, the fog of some power structure. But at the end of the day, it's all just totally dispersed. And I think of it as, like, who's in control of how people think or whatever. You know what? No one's in control anymore. It's all just these kind of weird, huge fogs of information.
You talk about nobody being in control, but I don't know. I would suggest that maybe somebody is in control. Maybe Bill Gates is in control or Steve Jobs is in control.
No.
Somebody's making money off these computers.
No, you can make money, but that doesn't mean you're in control. I mean, it's definitely money and power as we know it definitely exists, but the actual underlying impulses and urges of how people consume, buy, create their identity, and so on and so on, all of that's very, very, very paradoxical at the moment. It's more like how people exchange the elements of how they create and build and consume that is more powerful, like the routes of communication. It's not what one company owns or doesn't own or what president's in power or who's in Congress. Most of that stuff, the American operating system has moved far past. It's much more about the overall kind of dispersion.
You're listening to Paul D. Miller, aka DJ Spooky, on Radio Radio. When I think of mixing or editing in a traditional radio perspective, the goal is to manage some kind of completely seamless coming together of two pieces of audio. When we splice things together, we try to put them together so naturally that you can't hear the splice. We try to make the splice invisible or inaudible, and there's a real kind of anxiety around getting this splice seamless. One of the things that this program tries to undo is precisely that kind of anxiety. Here we try to make the edit into an aesthetic opportunity rather than into something to get worried about. And this is also something that I hear in your work. The moment where two pieces of sound butt up against each other or come together seems as important to you as those two separate pieces of sound.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I love the conflict and of how, you know, all these disparate elements can become one piece. I like that. The idea is that somehow seeing and exposing the process of appropriation and absorption and assimilation into one thing, you know, is far more intriguing to me than pointing out, hey, about everybody, it's all now the same thing. Most people at the end of the consumer process want that just one thing. You know, they want the seamless, finished, glossy, high-end lifestyle magazine to tell them how to live, or the hot, glossy high lifestyle track to tell them how to live, or the glossy high lifestyle shoes or clothes or whatever. I like the idea of exposing and kind of playing with the fragments of, you know, saying, hey, you know what, it's all collaged and spliced together like some sort of huge abstract Frankenstein drifting over the planet. You know, it's kind of you know, when you think about, just in general, I mean, who wants to think about all the fragments and like the little splices and stuff? Nobody, really. It's just kind of, but I like the idea of playing with that and making it become pop.
Don't believe.
mix by Paul D. Miller, aka DJ Spooky. Speaking of information, and speaking from a post-Napster moment where it seems that information really does want to be free, I'd like to talk with you a little bit about intellectual property, which is a term that has always sounded to me like a little bit of an oxymoron. A lot of people are terribly anxious about the end of intellectual property, but what I'm curious to hear from you is, what kind of new aesthetic opportunities do you think exist in a world where copyright is almost impossible to police?
Well, that's the future, really. I mean, I think copyright will be paid by those who feel like paying it, you know. It's just like everything. And again, it's an illusion, because once things are out in the world, it's gone, you know. Just imagine it as, you know, kids building sandcastles. You know, who owns the grains of the sand that each castle's built on? Nobody, really. It's part of the natural environment. The new natural environment is information, so everybody's going to be kind of dealing with that. And if you want to pay for that one castle instead of building your own, or more power to you, but I'd rather build my own sandcastle. And I'm sure everybody out there, as they become more familiar with the technology and the software and stuff, will probably do the same thing. Now, everything can be changed, you know. You can take the code of something and tweak it slightly and change it. Now, there's the whole kind of lawsuit between, say, for example, Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, where the one-click shopping issue is like a big deal. Wow, great. You know, it's absurd.
Paul, you're a pioneer in the art of new technologies, digital technologies, but I'm wondering if maybe you have any time for an old technology, an old medium like radio. Is radio dead, or is it best left to the purveyors of garlic pills and right-wing politics?
Well, the right-wing politic guys are totally old news, so of course they're using radio. You know, I don't know. It's like, I was in a cab the other day hearing Rush Limbaugh, and I was like, this guy is such an idiot. It's amazing. But you know, his voice can be heard loud and clear on radio. But, you know, it's one of these kind of funny things where, yeah, radio is cool. I mean, I'm far more fascinated with grassroots kind of pirate radio stuff and what's going on with mixed culture in those areas, like in England, or there's a pirate radio station in the Lower East Side, and some stuff going on in Brooklyn, where it's only available for, you know, a little, like, couple blocks or something. You know, and that's cool. I mean, I love the idea of that. And again, it's like a frantic micro niche kind of situation. And that's healthy, and I think it's respectable, and I support it. Mainstream radio has so many weird variables going. You know, it's just, good God, you know, it's, as an artist, for me, it's like the radio is the same thing as the gallery, same thing as the net, same thing as, you know, a mixtape. And you get, there's a lot of cultural politics into who gets played, how it gets played, when it gets played, and where it gets played. Personally, I'd rather play it myself. And I that's my kick, and that's what I follow. But, you know, it's all good. If somebody is far more fascinated with pop culture, that's good. That's cool. Hey, more power to them. It's a big world. And I like the idea of being able to be nomadic and move back and forth.
Do you have any early formative experiences of listening to radio when you were a kid?
Sure, yeah. I remember stuff. Believe it or not, on black radio, they used to play The Police, Roxanne, stuff like that. They used to play Chic, Good Times, all that stuff. I was in D.C., which is the city that gave us stuff like what George Clinton would call the Chocolate City concept, or not Bill Clinton, but George Clinton, you know, from P-Funk. and I was, you know, it was just a great, The Quiet Storm was like an R&B meets like sort of chilled out material in general. And the first theme song of the show was like a radio sound of a jet plane taking off. So it was, I don't know, it was a cool, it was one of my formative memories, really.
everyone is one, everyone is together, and everyone is in shock.
That's the one thing that always impresses me about our fellow New Yorkers.
You saw that on the streets where, you know, cell phones are working very sporadically, but if somebody was able to get a connection, somebody said, "Can I use your phone?" And people would just switch phones, and it was just amazing. People are just so helpful to one another in times like this.
Matheson with the latest there. Don, tell us, what's up?
Chris, I just took a walk down a part of the city that I know very well and have known for a long time, and I just cannot believe what I've seen. There's almost complete devastation. I saw active fires. There's a major blaze burning right now. It's in a large office building directly to the south. There's a major fire burning in an apartment complex. It's called Gateway Plaza. Three-quarters of one of the most beautiful places on this island is now completely destroyed, and that is the Winter Garden. There's fire trucks smashed to smithereens, police cars totally destroyed, city buses, taxi cabs, private cars, trucks, all kinds of vehicles destroyed. And there were people in many of these vehicles.
Done when the first day happened.
You've been listening to Paul D. Miller on Radio Radio. Our music was composed and performed by George Bruner, and we had technical help from Franz Moore. Radio Radio is made possible by grants from the PSC CUNY Research Fund of the City University of New York, and with the support of the Department of Television and Radio and the Music Department at Brooklyn College. You can check us out on the web, where you'll find sound files of all our programs, as well as additional info about the artists we feature. Our URL is epc.buffalo.edu/sound. I'm the producer of Radio Radio, Martin Spinelli.